Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's daf is Bava Basra, daf Gimel. The Gemara begins at the first line under the Tosfos commentary, Mokom Shenoagu Livnois, v'chulei. Here the Gemara deals with the building materials mentioned in the Mishnah. Gvil, Avnei Delo Meshafya. Gvil, we can call them raw stones. They're stones that have not been smoothed down. Gozis, Avne de Meshafya. The Gozis are stones that have been smoothed down. The numbers that you see above represent the thickness of the wall that would be made by these materials respectively. The Gvil would be a 6 tefach wide wall. The 5 of Gozis is a wall made of Gozis, 5 tefach wide. Now, where do we see Gozis mentioned in a source, in a pasuk, dichtiv, kol eile avonem yukoros kemidois Gozis. Kvisin archi. Kvisin are archi. And we mentioned this in our previous year. You're dealing here with what we call half bricks. And levenim are livni, are regular bricks. If we take a look at the Rashi on the issue of kvisin being archi, we notice Rashi a little less than halfway down, oriach chatzi levena. Oriach is a half a levena, v'alevena gimel tfachim. A standard levena is 3 handbreadths. V'oriach tefach u'mechza, the oriach is half of that, so it's 1.5 tfachim. V'uve hakoisel oriach mikan, the oriach mikan, a wall made of kvisin really is an oriach from one side and another oriach from the other side. We have the two neighbors that contribute there, arichim. The tefach be'emtza, and a handbreadth in the middle, shenoisin shom tiach l'chabro. There the cement is placed. You have to account for a tefach of cement in the middle for a total of 4 tefachim. Now, in the Gemara, you'll see we have 2 lishonos, and that's what this trapezoid volcano shape highlights. Omale rabo bre derovalo ravashi. Mimai de gvil, how do you know that gvil are avne delo meshafya ninu? V'hai tefach yisero lemurshe de karnasa. How do you know that gvil are the unshaped or unsmoothed, uncut stones, raw stones, and the extra tefach that you find by the gvil measuring 6 over the gozis, which was just 5, that extra tefach are lemurshe de karnasa, for the points of the stone that jut out. Dilma palga de gozis hu. Maybe gvil is simply half a gozis. A gozis, we mentioned, were stones measuring 5 tefachim in thickness. So this would be the 2.5 tefach thick stones. V'hai tefach yisera lebeini urbi hu. And the extra tefach that we say accounts for the gvil wall is for the cement that you place between between the 2 half gozis stones. Ke de ko amrinon, just like we said with regard to the kfisim levenim relationship. We said kfisim are archi, levenim are livni, v'hai tefach yisera leveni urvi. The extra tefach by the kfisim is for the cement you put between the 2 rows of stones. In that case, the 2 rows of bricks. So that's the question that Rabba put forward to Ravashi. Omale, Ravashi answers, ulitamech, according to you, that kfisim are archi minolon, from where do you know that kfisim are half bricks? Elo, gemora, gemiri, lo. It's a tradition that you have. Gvil nami, abnid, lo meshafio, gemora, gemiri, lo. That the gvil are also uncut stones, unsmooth, rough stones, that's also a tradition. Iko diamri. Now you see the same Gemara, but starting from the other direction, the opposite direction. Omale, Rav Acha, Bre, Rav Avia, Le Ravashi. Also, you see a change in the names. Here you have Rav Acha addressing Ravashi. In the first Loshon, Rabba was addressing Ravashi. Mimai dahai kfisin archi ninu vahai tefri sero leveni urbi. How do you know that the kvisin are half bricks and the extra tefach, we said four tefachim, tefach above the levanum, three tefachim is for the cement between the rows. Dilma my kvisin avne delo meshafion v'hai tefach yisera lemurshe de karnaso kidiko aminon gviol avne delo meshafion. Just like we said, by the gviol are the unsmooth stones, causes avne delo meshafion v'hai tefach yisera lemurshe de karnaso. Omalei, so Ravashi answers, Uletamech, according to you, that you're raising this question, Gvil, Avne Delo Meshafyam, and all on, where did you know that Gvil are the unsmoothed stones? Elo Gemara Gemiri Law, it's a tradition you have. Ochanami Gemara Gemiri Law, so too, with regard to the Kvisim Levenim relationship, there is that tradition. Omar Abaye, Shmamino, from that which we have learned, we can conclude, Kol Beni Urbi Tefach. The amount that you have to account for when you're dealing with the cement between the rows, that is one tefach. Now that idea, hani mili betina, that's if you're using the tina material. Aval berichsa boitvei, but if you're using, we'll call the cementing material, richsa, that's composed of ground stones, gravel maybe, then boy tfei, you would require more than one tefach for the for the space between the rows. The ikah of the amri hani mili, another version of what Abaye is saying is hani mili, that you need one tefach. That's berichsa, that's if you're using that gravel like cement material. Avo betina, but if you're using the tina cement material, lo boy kuliha, you wouldn't require even a full tefach. The Memra de Begozis, are you suggesting from what we have learned already? We said that in the case of Gozis, each neighbor contributes 2.5 tefachim and of width toward the building of the wall, and you'll then build a wall of 4 tefachim in height. So according to this calculation, Rashi points out, if you were to have, let us say, an 8 amo high wall, you would have to have a thickness of 10 tefachim. In other words, 5 tefachim enables you to build a wall till 4 amos of height. That would then stand to reason that if you need to have a wall of 8 amos, you would have to have a thickness of 10 tefachim. So are we to conclude all of that? Lememra de begozis kol dalid amos gova, that for every 4 amos of height, I have pusya chamisha koi I lo koi, that if it has a width of 5 tefachim, it'll stand, and if it doesn't have a width of 5 tefachim for every additional 4 amos of height, it won't stand. Well, but v'ha amo traxin, the have gavoa talsin amsov lo have pusya lo shis pushri v'kom. In the Beis Hamikdash, there was a wall in the first Beis Hamikdash that was built by Shlomo Melech. There was a wall separating the Kiddush from the Kiddush HaKadoshim, and that wall is called Amo Traxin. Later we'll see the Tosfos who explains what the word Traxin means, but what we know about that, it was 30 Amsa, 30 Amas in height, and it was, like the name implies, an Amo is composed of 6 Tvachim. Its width was only 6 Tvachim. So what happened with the supposed ratio of for every 4 amos, you need to have 5 tefachim of width? Here you have a wall of 30 amos of height. That's like, it's more than 7 times the 4 amo height. And we increased the thickness of the wall by only 1 tefach. The Gemara answers, Kevon deika tefach yisera koi. We're going to see a variation of this later on, a different approach. But for the time being, the building ratio that we assumed before isn't so. By adding, if you have a geometric increase of strength of support. By adding one more tefach, you are able to increase the height manyfold. And that's how we explain the 30 on a high wall in the Beis HaMikdash, having a thickness of merely one extra tefach, six tochim, namely one amo. And the assumption that we made before that for every four amos you need to have five tochim is simply not so. Uva mikdasheni my time alovud amo traksin. Once we get onto this discussion of the Beis HaMikdash, why is it that in the second Beis HaMikdash there was no amotraxin? You didn't have that wall, but rather what separated the Kiddush from the Kiddush of Kadoshim in the second Beis HaMikdash were curtains, two curtains placed at that point between the Kiddush and the Kiddush of Kadoshim. So why in the second Beis HaMikdash did it not have a wall of that we call the amotraxin? The Gemara answers, Kikoi, when we speak of a wall being able to stand, that's betalsin koi, a six tefach thick wall, enables a wall of 30 amos to stand. However, tve lo koi, but more, no. And we didn't point out, but in the second Beis HaMikdash height was, in fact, 100 amos, more than three times the height of the first Beis HaMikdash. So don't expect there to have been an amotraxin, being that the height was so great. Umenolan the Have Govoat Fe, from where do you know that the second Beis HaMikdash was taller than the first? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Godol Yeh Kavoid Habayez Hazeh Ho'achron Nino Rishon. Greater will be the honor of the second Beis HaMikdash than more than the first. Now, the word Godol, then, for the time being, accounts for the taller Beis HaMikdash. Now the Gemara expounds upon that. Rav Ushmuel, the Amri Law, another version of names, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lozer, Hadomar, Bebinyon, the Godol that we just referred to in the Pasuk is, in fact, a reference to the structure, the height, that, like we just said. The Hadomar, another approach, and this is we didn't say before, that Godol is, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Beshonim, years. The first Beis HaMikdash stood for 410. The second Beis HaMikdash stood an additional 10 years, 420. And in truth, v'isa laha, both are correct. Both, in fact, existed. Greater in physical structure and height, and greater in longevity. And you'll see now we have diamonds introducing alternatives, questions regarding the second Beis HaMikdash and the structure. So the Gemara asks, "V'nev du talsin amen bebinyan?" Why not in the second Beis HaMikdash make 30 amos of structure? We mentioned before curtains. The first 30 amos would be actual stones. V'idoch neve parochas, and from the 30 amo mark up till the 100 amo mark, then have the curtain. The Gemara answers, Ki koi talsin amso nami, when we spoke about the stones wall being able to reach a height of 30 amos, agav tikru maziva koi, below tikru umaziva lo koi. That's when you have the 30 amo wall that existed in the Beis HaMikdash reached the ceiling. That's the term tikro umaziva is a reference to the materials that comprise the ceiling. So when you have a height of 30 amos, you also the 30 amma high wall was held in place in security in a solid position by having the ceiling pressing down from above. And in the second Beis HaMikdash, at the 30 amma mark, there was no ceiling. There was still airspace. The ceiling appeared only at the 100 amma mark. So to suggest having a 30 amma tall wall in the second Beis HaMikdash would be unrealistic. V'levid ma de'efshar b'binyon, v'levid idoch poroches. Why not, in the second Beis HaMikdash, make as much as would stand by way of stone, and beyond that, a curtain. So, okay, I understand you can't have 30 amas of height, but no stone wall whatsoever. Have as much stone as you could, and the rest, curtain. Omar Abaye. So Abaye answers Gemiri, we have a tradition, I kulhu b'vinyon, I kulhu b'poroches. The tradition is either all stone or all curtain, not half and half, or part this, part that. kulu bebinyan mimikdash, the suggestion of having all binyan, stone structure, the precedent for that was from the first Beis HaMikdash, and hence we would if you're going to use stones and in the second Beis HaMikdash, you have to continue that tradition. And e kulu beparoches, the other suggestion of having purely paroches, that's mi mishkan, that's derived from the mishkan, which was a structure that was divided, namely between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Mishkan was a pure curtain. Ibaya laho, hein v'sidon, regarding the dimensions mentioned in the Mishnah. Do the dimensions, we saw 3, 4, 5, and 6, thickness, dimensions, do they include the we'll call the facing material? In other words, you have raw stone, and the on the surface, on the outside surface of the stones, an additional material was added called seed. So we're asking now, Ibailo Hain Vesidon, the dimensions mentioned in the Mishnah, do they include the seed? El Dilma Hain below Sidon, or are the dimensions of the Mishnah just the stones themselves, and the seed would account for an additional amount of thickness? As far as the markings that you see, we're going to have a back and forth structure. These are the triangles with the point facing up represent answers to this question, and the inverted triangles that you see are rejections. So Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Mistabra Hein V'Sidon. It's most likely that the dimensions are inclusive. The E Sakadaita Hein below Sidon, if you were to think that it's just the stones, but there's actual additional thickness you have to account for because of the Sid, Lisnei L'Shirei, let the Mishnah state that dimension. Yelolav Shmamino Hein V'Sidon. The Mishnah makes no mention of that. So it must be that the dimensions in the Mishnah are inclusive. It's not just the stone, but stone plus the seed. Lo. The Gemara rejects that. Below Sidon. It's just the stones. The seed would account for an additional amount of thickness, but it wouldn't reach a full tefach of thickness. So since it's, we'll call it an insignificant amount, it's less than a tefach, so the Mishnah doesn't bother mentioning it. The Gemara asks, "V'ha'katani b'levenim," but the Mishnah though doesn't hesitate when it comes to the discussion concerning the bricks. Zeh no sein tefach u'mechza, v'zeh no sein tefach u'mechza. Technically speaking, when we speak about the levenim, we'd really be speaking about the kfisin, which were half bricks. The Bach has a changed girsa on this. But for our purposes, the Mishnah itself doesn't hesitate to deal with less than tefach dimensions. In the case of the kfisin, which were half levanim, half bricks, it said each party contributes 1.5 tefachim. And you can see in our markings, we've dashed underlined the word mechza. And then there was, of course, the additional cement in the middle. But the Mishnah doesn't hesitate to deal with statistics with dimensions less than a tefach. The Gemara says that's different. Hasam chazi litzdrufi. There, the less than tefach measure was joined. Litzdrufi litzdarifs, to join up with the other half tefach that the other neighbor contributed of thickness for a full tefach. The sid, after all is said and done, would not have added up to even a tefach. Ta shma. Again, we try to prove that the we're going to try to prove that it's Hain below Sidon. We'll call it the opposite direction of what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was taking. It says in a Maseches Erevin, when the Gemara there deals, and here we have a citation of a Tanaic source from Maseches Erevin, at the entrance to a Movui, regarding Hilchas Shabbos and carrying, you would need to have either a lechi or a korah. A korah is a beam running across the top of the mavui, and that beam had to have a minimum amount of width to it. Hakorah shamru rechava kedei lekabel oriach. The korah spoken of regarding the mavui had to be wide, the width of with sufficient to hold upon it, to support upon it an oriach. If you look in your Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that we've been recommending along the way, you'll see more about this. The oriach is chatzi levena shel gimel tfachim. The oriach, it was a half brick, the brick itself measuring 3 tfachim. Now, so what do we see from here? We see from here that the brick itself is 3 tvachim. So when the Mishnah mentions 3 tvachim, it's talking about the brick itself, not inclusive of the sid. Rashi, the upper part of the narrow lines, gimel tvachim, it says, Alma gimel tvachim dekotoni legabi masnisin, the 3 tvachim mentioned in our Mishnah, gabi levenim, as it said, that amount is hain below Sidon Komar. We see from here that the brick on its own, the brick by itself, is 3 tvachim. The Gemara rejects this proof. It says, Hasam berav revosa. The Mishnah in Maseches Erevin is dealing with large kind of bricks. And that's not the type of brick that our Mishnah was speaking of. The brick in our Mishnah was 3 tvachim, but that's the lesser size brick, and hence the 3 tvachim is an amount that includes the sid. Daika nami dekotoni. By careful reading, you can see this in the Mishnah Erevin, that you're dealing with a large kind of brick, because it says shel shlosha tvachim. It says the brick that's made of 3 tvachim. By saying the brick of 3 tvachim, michlal, that leads us to infer to ikah zutra that there must be smaller ones. Shma mina, and this is conclusive that the brick in Erevin is the larger variety, and the smaller variety is obviously then less than 3 tvachim. And if you're going to give the a dimension of 3 tvachim for the thickness of the of a wall made of levanim, so you can rest assured then it's 3 tvachim, which is brick plus the seed. Later on, Mitzvah Shem will see Tosfos analyzes this. How are you so sure? How's the Gemara so sure that if the Mishnah says in Erevin a brick of 3 tvachim, that there must be smaller ones? Maybe there are larger ones. Mitzvah Shem will leave that for the Tosfos later on. Omar. Now the Gemara goes into a new topic, and this topic deals with the with matters regarding construction of shuls, and more accurately, the repair of shuls, and in doing so, is there a possibility of knocking down a shul in anticipation of rebuilding it later? Omar Rav Chisda, lo lister inish bei knishta ad deboni bei knishta achriti. One is not to knock down a shul until the replacement shul is built. So if you have a community that wants to build a new shul, they must complete the building of the new shul before they would knock down the old one. Why this, we'll say, sense of urgency or restriction? Iko diamri, some say mishum pshusa, viko diamri mishum tsaluye. One approach is because we're afraid of pshusa, of irresponsibility, or some outside force coming along, preventing them from completing the building of the second shul. So if they would knock down the first one, they'll never come to complete the second one. You can see the problem. Rashi says, "Mishum pshusa dilmo misrami oines upashi v'lo bonu achriti." Some kind of outside oinus, a force beyond their control, will come out and will arise, preventing them from building the second one. So just imagine they would come and knock down the first one, hoping to build a second one, and never come to do so. The other answer given by the Gemara of why not to do so is tzlu. Tzlu means a place to daven. They need a place to daven during the time of the construction of the second shul. So don't knock down the first one. My binayu, what would be a practical point of difference between these two explanations? Ika binayu, di ika duchto litsuye. We're using the alternative girsa, and that is that if you had a community that had another place to daven, not another shul, that's what the girsa change indicates. They simply had another place to daven. So that if the consideration is that don't knock down the first one because during the construction of the second one you don't have any place to daven, but they have a hall, they have some kind of hall or room available for them to daven in, there would be then no problem. But if the consideration is that they'll never come up to build the second one, so what? That in the meantime they have some kind of alternative place to daven, that doesn't solve the problem of of a community having to have an actual shul. Mreimar Mazutra, Sasri Ubanu, Bei Kaita Besisva, Vesasri Ubanu Besisva, Bekaita. We'll see an extensive discussion about this later in the Tosfos, but in the meantime, let us first look at the Rashi, and then we'll look at the Rabbeinu Gershom. Rashi, Bei Kaito B'Sisva, Bei Sakneses Hoyolahem, Limois Achoref, they had a shul that in the winter time, Nomuch, Bixolim, it was Nomuch, it was a low structure, Bixolim Rechovim, with thick walls, V'chalonus Motim, and a minimum amount of windows, Mitnei Hatzina. A construction like that will preserve, would be beneficial because of the cold outside. So it would be a place in which the warmth is preserved. U'b'yemois hachamo, Beis Hakneses Acher. Now, we've highlighted the word Acher in the Rashi. That's a significant word as far as trying to understand the story here with Mreimar Marzutra. They had a separate structure in that they used during the summertime, Shavir Sholei Bo. It was an airy structure whereby they would enjoy some level of comfort, coolness. The Rabbeinu Gershom, we have it marked in our Gemaras. You can see it underlined in the upper part of the Rabbeinu Gershom commentary. Sosru Bonu Bekaito Besisva, Shomati Deshtei Botei Knesis Halehem. So far, the Rabbeinu Gershom is learning like the Rashi. Technically speaking, Rabbeinu Gershom was a little bit earlier than the Rashi. So Rashi was learning like this part of the Rabbeinu Gershom, that they had two synagogues. Be'echor hoyu sfalim b'moyis hakshomu, be'echor b'moyis hachamo. Oisishi y'moyis hachamo, hoyu mechaskin oisoi b'moyis hakshomu. Summer shul, they would do whatever repairs were necessary on it during the winter. V'shei y'moyis hakshomu, b'moyis hachamo. And winter shul, any repairs it needed, they would do on it during the summer. Kedei shihei lohem mokom tfilo b'chol shah. With this practice, they ensured themselves of having a synagogue, a shul available to them at any given time. So that in the wintertime, they were occupied with any repairs on the summer shul, so that as soon as the summer came, it was ready for them, and likewise the other way around. Shoal, we continue in the Gemara, Shoal Ravino the Ravashi. In light of Rav Chisto's restriction above, Ravina asks Ravashi, "Gavu zuzi umachti mai." Let us say that the community gathered money, and the money is lying there. All the money that's needed for the building of the second shul. Once all of the money is there, couldn't you knock down the first shul? As far as Pshia is concerned, there doesn't seem to be anything to worry about. So focusing on that particular analysis of do not knock down first one because you might not come to complete the second one, what would be if all the money is available? Omar Lay, Ravashi says, even though all the money has been collected and is lying there ready for the second shul construction, you can't rely on that. Why? Dilmo Misrami Lu Pidyon Shvuyim. the community might be might encounter the need for redeeming captive Jews. V'yavilu, and they'll take all of that money for the purpose of redeeming captive Jews, and the second shul won't come to be built. So you better not do not knock down the first one just because the money is there. The money might never come to be used for its original purpose. Question: Shrigi livni v'hadri hudri umachti kshuri mai. Without getting into literal translations, just let's say all of the building materials. The Shrigi Livni, if the, Rashi explains, means that all the bricks are lined up, one upon the other, ready for construction. The Hudri are roofing material. The Kshuri are beams. Everything's there. All the building materials are there. What would the law be then? Amale, Rav Ashi says you can't rely on that either. Zimnin de misramilu pidyon shurim mezavni viavilu. The same problem might arise, of the need for redeeming captive Jews, and they'll sell off all those building materials. The Gemara asks, well, Lihachi, if that's the case, there's no end to your to worrying. Don't ever knock down first shuls. Afilu bonunami, even if the second shul has been rebuilt, don't knock down the first one. They might come to need to sell the second shul. Amale, dirose de inshi lo mezavni. Dwelling structures of people, one does not sell, even for something as significant as pidyon shvuyim. So once the structure is built, there would be no expectation of them to have to sell that off for pidyon shvuyim. Now, we mentioned before that one is not to knock down the first one until the new shul is built. For lo amoron, that is now qualified. Elo de lo chazi ba tiwa. That in the first shul, there was no, obvious need of urgent repair. Tua would be something like a significant structural deficiency, a crack in the wall threatening it with a collapse. So, how avochazi ba tua? If tua is present in the first shul, sasri ubani, then they have a right to knock it down. There's a threat of danger. Knock it down, even though the second shul has not been rebuilt, has not been built. Kiha Duravashi, like the story involving Ravashi, chaza ba tua b'knishta demaso mechasya. He noticed a tua in the shul of the city of Mechasya, Sasrei. He knocked it down. He saw to it that the structure was knocked down. And in the meantime, they now have to build a new shul. The Ail Lepuria Lahasam, and he brought his bed over there, the Lo Afke, and didn't remove it ad the Maskin Le Shvifi. Until the new structure was built, including the drains, the Marzevin. Rashi says Marzevin. My understanding is that would be the final touch put onto the shul, or possibly that was part of the urgency. So until that. The final touches that indicate that the repair has been completed, only then did he remove his bed from there. His sleeping there served to motivate them concerning the construction. Rashi says, Ailu Lepuria Hasam, he brought his bed over there, Kideshalo Yisyaish Bevinyano, so that they shouldn't become lax and give up on the construction. Shacham al Shomim Mitzaren Oso. They saw their great rabbi being subjected to major discomfort because of the sun and the rain. So they hastened to, they became diligent in the reconstruction that was necessary. Ubova ben Buta. Now, you can see we have a firebox around his name. He is going to, the center of our discussion until Daf Dalet Omen Aleph. The Gemara discusses the monarch Hordus, or Herod, who lived in the latter part of the second Beis HaMikdash period. And he was responsible for the, we'll say, the reconstruction, the remodeling of the second Beis Hamikdash. And here the Gemara raises, how could Bava Ben Buta eventually, you'll see in the Gemara, provide that counsel for him to have the existing temple knocked down and then rebuilt. Ubava Ben Buta, Hechi Asve Le Eitza Lehurdus. How could Bava Ben Buta provide counsel to Hurdus, Le Mistere Le Beis Hamikdash, to knock down the Beis Hamikdash that was standing till that point in time? Is it not so that Rav Chisda said one is not to knock down an existing shul until the replacement one is built? So the Gemara answers, Iboy Seima, some say you can say that Tua Chazabay, what they noticed, the Tua, the major major structural fault is what they saw, and we saw earlier that if that arises, then Rav Chisda's restriction doesn't apply. Iboy Seima, another approach is Malchus Hashayini, a monarch is different. If your whole fear is that the second shul, in the case of Rav Chisda, wouldn't finally be rebuilt or built because of Pshiusa, you don't have to worry about that when you're dealing with a monarch. The Lo Hadra Bay, kings don't back out. Yomar Shmuel, E Omar Malchusa Akarna Turi, Akar Turi V'Lo Hadra Bay. If a king says, "I'm going to uproot a mountain," he'll uproot the mountain and not back out. Now, the Gemara goes into a little background concerning Hurdus. Hurdus, Avda Beis Hashmonei Havi. Hurdus was actually a slave from the Beis Hashmonei, from the Hasmonean kingdom. Nosan Einov Ba'isa Tinaikis. This Hurdus gazed upon, wanted to take as a mate, a young girl, from the Beis Hashmonei. Yumachad Shamei Baskola Di Omar. One day he heard a heavenly voice that announced, "Kol avdo de morid hashto maslach." Any slave that rebels right now from his master will be successful. Kom kadlinu lekulu marvasei. So Hurdus arose and killed all of his masters. V'shayra lahi yenukta, and he left only that young girl. Ki chazus dahahi yenukta the kaboy lemitziva. When that young girl from the Beis Hashmonei noticed that he, Herod, Hurdus, wanted to marry her, slika leigra v'roma kola amra, she went up to a roof, raised her voice, and said, "Kol man da'asi v'omar lemibeis Hashmonei ka'isina." Anyone who henceforth will tell you that they are from the Hasmonean household, avdahu, let it be known that he is a slave. Here she speaks in third person, but referring to herself. There is no one left from that household except for myself, and it was that girl. Again, referring to herself, and that girl, Nofla Migrulara, fell off a roof. She committed suicide. And that's what happened. So as she made that announcement, jumped off the roof. No one is left from the Hasmonean household, and anyone who is now going to announce thusly is a slave. Namely, it's a reference to Herod and anyone that comes forth from him. Herod took that girl, took her body, Tomna Sheva Shonin Bedufsha, and left her immersed in honey for 7 years. Ikodamri bo'ala, ikodamri lo bo'ala. Some say he had intimacy with her, and some say he didn't. The amri lo bo'ala, those that say that he had intimacy with her, hard to tamna, misuve liyitzrei, that which he preserved her in honey, that was in order for him to be able to comfort or deal with his evil inclination, with his desires, so that he preserved her and carried out his intimacy with her like that. There are others that say no, he didn't have intimacy with her. Ha de tamna, and that which he had is preserved her in honey. Ki hechi de nomru, so that it can be said, bas melech nosap, he would be able to announce, "Here, this is my wife, and as I married a princess." Omar Hurdus said, "Man dorish." Now, Hurdus understands, he recognizes that he's not a kosher king. The pasuk in the Torah that makes reference to kings says, first the Gemara will present the pasuk. Man Dorash, who is it that darshans the pasuk? Mikerev achecha tosim olecha melech. Mirza Shem will see Tosis later on, but we'll introduce what he says right now. The Hordas was bothered by the fact that the simple reading of the pasuk would not have excluded him from serving as king. The pasuk says, from amongst your brethren you shall appoint a king. What the simple reading of the pasuk would do is exclude idol worshippers, not slaves. Slaves have a unique status, certainly not the status of an idol worshipper. True, maybe not a full-fledged Jew, but nevertheless, the pasuk wouldn't exclude him. But if you apply the principles of the oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh, slaves as well will be excluded through this pasuk. So who is it that will exclude me, says Hordas, by virtue of this pasuk? Ah, Rabbonan. It's the Rabbonan that darshan the pasuk. And that raised his ire. Come, Katlinu Lukul Rabbonan. He arose and killed off practically all of the Rabbonan. The Gemara says all of the Rabbonan, but Tosfos will point out it can't be literally all of the Rabbonan, so we're explaining he killed off most of the Rabbonan. And as his expression of vengeance, if you will, to the rabbis that are responsible for his unacceptability as king. However, Shafke Labova ben Buta, and this was the name that we featured before, he left, however, Bava ben Buta, who was a great rabbinic figure in that time, talking about the later part of the Second Temple period, and he left him Lemishkal Eitzamine to serve as a counselor. However, he didn't leave him in the best of states. The Gemara continues at the top of the Aftalid Omed Aleph. Ahadre le klila diyali, he took the skin of a certain type of sheretz, we'll call it a thorny sheretz. Imagine something like a porcupine. He took its its skin and made a type of what's a headband, and with the spikes facing inwards, nikrinu leine, and he tied this around his head, and thereby blinding him, literally nikrinu leine, gouging out his eyes. But he blinded Bava ben Buta. Yom achad also of Yosef Kamei. One day he, Hordas, came and sat next to Bava ben Buta, who is now blind. Omar, and Hordas, in a state of incognito, said, "Chazi mar hai avdo bisho my covid. Do you see what that evil slave has done?" Omalei, so Bava ben Buta, recognizing that it was actually Hordas himself speaking to him, so Bava ben Buta says, "My avid lei, what can I do? What can I do about it? What should I do to him?" Omalei, so Hordas says, "Not day more. Curse him." Amalei, Bava says, "No way." Ksiv, the pasuk says, "Gam b'maduacho melech al tekalel." Even in your mind, do not curse a king. Amalei, "Hai lav melechu." Who does he's not a king? Amalei, so Bava says, "Vlevi yoshi b'amo." Let him be a mere wealthy man, not a king. Even if he's a mere wealthy man, Ksiv, the pasuk says, "Uvachadre mishkovcho at kalel oshir." In your private chambers, in your bedrooms, do not curse a rich man. Velo yehi elo nasi, let him be not anything more than a prince. Uksiv nasi bam cholosor. Pasuk in Shmos says a leader from your people, do not curse out. Amalei, Huda says that doesn't that pasuk cannot restrict you from cursing him out. That pasuk says nasi bamcho, that's boisimai samcho. I love Oisa Maisa Amcha. Amcha is taken to mean someone who practices the ways of Jews, a properly behaved individual, leader, do not curse. But he's not a properly behaved individual. Amalei, Bovo says, Mistafino Mine, I'm afraid of him. Amalei, Leko Inish Dozil Dele Mole, Dano Viatya Sivna. There's no one that's going to tell him about your cursing him. There's only me and you that are sitting here. Amalei, Bovo says, We say a little birdie told me. The Pasuk says a winged creature that will take the voice, take the words, and inform him. Amale, Hordas now reveals, Anohu, I am in fact him. Had I known that the rabbis are so careful, I would never have killed them. Hashta my takante dehu gavra. Now, after what I have done, he speaks in the third person. What's the solution for that man, referring to himself? What kind of tshuva is available? Amale. So Bava responds. We'll see. We have two versions, and that's what you see. The Roman numeral 1, and a couple lines later, Ikal the Amri. Amale, who kava oro shel olam? He, Bava says to Hordas, he, meaning you, extinguished the light of the world. Dichtiv kiner mitzvah v'torah or you by destroying the rabbis who are the Bali Torah. Torah is or, and now you extinguished the light of Torah. So now go and concern yourself, preoccupy yourself with the matter of the light of the world. Referring to the, we'll say the Beis Hamikdash, it says, "V'noharu elav kol agoyim." All the nations will be attracted to it. And the word noharu, you find elsewhere, you find the word nahora, referring to light. So, being attracted to something, it's like it's something that has is a source of light. People see it and are attracted to it. Ika di Amri, Hachi Amale. Another version is, this is what Bava ben Buta said, Hu sima eino shel olam. He, referring to Hordas, blinded the eyes of the world. Dichtiv, Vahoya im me'ayne ho'eda. Pasuk referring to the Sanhedrin, the Aine Ho'eda, the eyes of the community, is a reference to the Sanhedrin. So you blinded the eyes of the world by killing the rabbis. Yevich v'yisasik ba'ine shalom. Go and occupy yourself with the eye of the world. Dichtiv, hinini mechalel es mikdash galinuzchem machmad aynechem. The Pasuk referring to the Beis HaMikdash, you can see we've highlighted the word aynechem. The word eyes is appropriate for the Beis HaMikdash as well. So concern yourself with the building of the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Omar Lay, Hordas says, Mistafina mi machusa. Again, a little historical perspective is helpful. Hordas, though he was we'll call it a type of monarch, he was under the thumb of the Roman Empire. He had to answer to, we'll call it, a higher authority. So he says, I'm afraid of the Malchus. I'm afraid of the Romans. Omar Lay, Bava says, Shadar Shlicha, send an emissary, a messenger, Velezel Shasa, Velakiv Shasa, Vlader Shasa. It'll take him a year to get there to Rome. He'll tarry there for a year, and then he'll finally return. It'll take him a year to get back. You can buy time, so to speak, 3 years. You can knock down the Beis HaMikdash and rebuild it. Ovan Hochi, he did thusly. Sholchule, from Rome, the following message reached him. Imlo sasrisa altisdor. If you didn't knock it down, don't bother doing it. Vim sasrisa altiv. If you knocked it down, the Beis HaMikdash, don't rebuild it. Vim sasrisa bonisa. And if you, in fact, knocked it down and rebuilt it, Avdi Bisha Boser de Avdin Mismalchin. The evil, the bad slave, after he's a slave, he thinks he's a king. Im Zainoch Aloch Safroch Khan. If we take a look at Rashi, in the upper part of the narrow lines, Im Zayonoch Aloch Sifroch Khan, Im Nizgoesa Bikli Milchamtacha, if you are so haughty with your weapons, Shaharakto Beis Adonecha, that you killed off all of your masters, Sefer Yuchsin Shaloch Biodenuhu, Yodanu Shata Evet, your pedigree, your genealogical records are with us, and we know that you are a slave. And the Gemara continues, Lo Raka, you're not a king, Velo Baraka, not the son of a king, Hordas Avda, Kalanim is Avid, Hordas the slave, sought his own freedom, became a free man by himself. My Raka, what does the word Raka mean? Malchusa. It is a reference to monarchy. Dichtiv, Anochi Hayom Rach Umoshuach Melech. You see in this pasuk referring to the king, the word rach, like raka. The boy same on mehacha, but he cruel the fun of avrech, referring to Yosef, who was a type of monarch. The word avrech, let's notice the end of that word, resh chaf. Let us now turn to the Tosfos on Daf Gimel Omed Aleph, the third to last Tosfos, Dibor HaMaschil Arba. The Tosfos will explain the Kavona of the Gemara when it spoke of a wall made of gozes, which was a 5 tefach thick wall. It wouldn't stand more than 4 amas of height. It would not stand. You needed to have 5 tefach to enable a 4 ama wall to stand. The initial feeling is that 4 amas, 5 tefachim would simply not be sufficient. But in light of reality, we know that 5 tefach thick gozes walls will support a height of more than 4 amos. Now the Tosfos, arba amos gova apusya dehei koi. The Gemara mentioned that a wall of 4 amos of height with a thickness of 5 tefachim will stand, fei lo koi, but more than 4 amos will not stand. The kashi la rabbeinu tam ha levanim degree. When it comes to the levanim brick material, which is worse, green means a lesser quality, lesser strength. Yet koi b'shloisha tefachim. If you're going to make a wall using levanim, we know that the walls spoken of in the Mishnah, you're talking about a 4 ama tall wall. So here you have a material that's less than 5 tefachim, and yet it will support 4 amos. Why, when it comes to the gozes, do you say that that 5 tefachim is the maximum it can support is 4 amos? When even less than 5 tefachim will support 4 amos, you could extrapolate from that if you've got 5 tefachim of thickness, it certainly would be able to support more than 4 amos. V'oid, furthermore, ha ko chazinon dekoi begozes tvei haporta. We know, when kol chazinim, as we look, we see that even more than 4 amos of height is supported by using gozes that's less than 5 tefachim of thickness will be able to support even more than 4 amos. So what does the Gemara mean by this? We'll call this very tight relationship between 5 tefachim of thickness will support 4 amos, and not more. The Gemara answers. The Tosfos answers. The Tirates. The Hachi Ka'omar. In understanding what the Gemara was saying when it spoke of the 5 tefach 4 ama relationship. It means thusly, Tfei lo koi kemishpat gozis, sheroitzim b'nei odom livnoisoi, sheyamoid yomim rabim, kesheboinen begozis. When people use gozis, they expect it to be a wall that will stand for a long time. We can say for many, many years. If you want to ensure yourself of a gozes wall that will stand, that will meet the expectations of man to stand for a long, long time, then use these dimensions. Follow that ratio. 5 tefachim of thickness, a wall of 4 amos, and not more. If you're going to build a wall of more than four amos, you could use five tvachim. It'll stand, but not as long as people would expect a Gozis type wall to stand. Tosfos Dibur HaMaschil Traxin. The Gemara made mention, three lines from the bottom, of the Amotraxin, the wall that stood in the first Beis HaMikdash between the Kiddush and the Kiddush HaKadoshim. In this Tosfos, we'll see two approaches to understanding that word. Omer Rabbeinu Tam. The word Traxin is really a compound expression made of two words, Torak and Sin. So Rabbeinu Tam explains, the Torak have kemo troki goli in Brochas Dav Chav Ches means to close. Goli is a door, to close the door, as is if you look in the Gemara in Brochas, you'll see that's where that expression appears, troku goli. For our purposes, we want to focus on the word Torak or troki, means to close. The sin, the second part of the word traxin, sin, have a Sinai. That's a reference to Mount Sinai. Klomar, what do we know about Mount Sinai? That's the place that the Ten Commandments, the Luchos Habris, were given. Klomar, Shehoya, the Amotraxin, Mafsik, Vesoger, Esaluchos, separated the rest of the Beis HaMikdash and closed upon the Luchos Shenitnu B'Sinai that were given at Mount Sinai. Shehoyu Munachos Ba'oron Shehoyu B'Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Luchos were placed in the Aron HaKadosh that was in the Holy of Holies, and hence the term Amotraxin. It closed upon the that wall closed in the Ten Commandments that were located within the Kodesh HaKodashim. V'yesh Meforshim. And now a second approach. Traxin, the word traxin means ponim v'chutz, inside and outside. She'oisa amo, that amo of thickness between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim in the Beis HaMikdash. Hoisa sofek, there is an element of doubt, im mekudeshes, pnim oichutz. Did it have the sanctity level of within, of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or outside, or the Kodesh? And there are different levels of sanctity, as is featured in Maseches Kelim. There are 10 levels of Kedusha, and there is a difference between the Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim versus the Kedusha of the Kiddush. And therefore, in the second Beis HaMikdash, there were shtei porochos. There were two curtains that existed. We made a reference to these curtains in the learning of the Gemara that were placed between the Kiddush and Kedoshim, the Kiddush and Kedoshim. There was an amo space between them. Kinamrinu biyuma, that those two curtains with the amo between them, that space between the two curtains was in fact an area that had this element of doubt between that existed there. Did that area have the status of Kodesh or Kodesh HaKadoshim? Hence, if there was just one curtain, how a curtain isn't that thick, you don't have an amo thick curtain, you would then have created a situation where you have a spot that's exposed, not marked off, so to speak, as a place of doubt, and that would have created a problem. But this way, the area, that amo section of doubt has been marked off, so to speak, by the presence of the two curtains. Tosfos Dibur Maschil Shaini. In presenting the statistics of wall thickness and height, the Gemara had mentioned that five tvachim is necessary to support a height of four amos. The Gemara mentioned, the thinking at that point in the Gemara was that if you wanted to have, let us say, an 8 amma tall wall, you'd have to have a 10 tefach thick wall. And yet we saw in the Beis HaMikdash, not 5, but a mere addition of 6, meaning a total of 6 tefachim, supported a 30 amma tall wall. The Gemara answered, and we read the Tosfos, Shaini Hosam, the Iko Tefach Yisera. We spoke of a geometric increase because of that one extra tefach. Tosfos says, Havi Motzi Lishnei, the Gemara could have answered, the Agav Tikra Umaziva Koitve, Kidarinon Besomuch. There was an alternative answer the Gemara could have given at the outset, namely that which the Gemara says at the top of Gimel Amud Beis, that the Beis HaMikdash had the advantage of the ceiling supporting the ceiling from above supporting the tall wall, the 30 amma tall wall, enabling the thickness of just 6 tefachim to be sufficient. So you have, as we when we were learning the Gemara, we point out you had a couple of approaches to explain how 30 amas can be accounted for when you have a mere 6 tefachim, when in order to have a 4 amma, you needed to have 5. So we have the either the geometric increase of support afforded by the additional tefach, or, as the Gemara says at the top of Amud Beis, the weight of the ceiling keeping the 30 amma tall wall in place, the support offered from above. We now can we now continue to the top of Gimel Amud Beis, Tosfos Dibur Masel Omar Abaye. Presenting the issue of the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara had suggested why not in the second Beis HaMikdash have stone as much as you could have, and the rest curtain. So Abaye said, Omar Abaye, Gemiri, we have a tradition of either all stone from, and that tradition derived from the first Beis HaMikdash, or all curtain as derived from the Mishkan. Hashta, now with that in mind, lo tzorech l'shinuya kama. You don't need the previous answer for how a 30 amma wall stood and we explained there that you had the Tikra Umaziva. That information of Tikra Umaziva helped us answer the question of why in the second Beis HaMikdash did they not make as much as they could with stone and then the rest with curtain. And the Gemara had said earlier the reason that the ability of 30 amas to stand was only because you had Tikra Umaziva. You don't need to come onto that right now in order to answer the question of why didn't they in the second Beis HaMikdash make part stone and the rest curtain. Very simply because of this tradition. That's why they didn't do part this and part that, without having to explain that the 30 was able to stand because of Tikra Umaziva. We can say right now, even if the 30 was able to stand without the Tikra Umaziva, you still couldn't have part stone and the rest curtain. Tosfos Dibur Maschil Michlal. The Gemara had mentioned, based on a source in Maseches Erevin, that the Korah had to be able to support an Ariach that was a Chatzi Leveino Shel Gimel Tvachim. And the Gemara was attempting to show from that the Leveino, or in general, the statistics in the Mishnah were the with the stones themselves without the sid facing material that was added. And the Gemara then rejected that by saying that the Levena Shalgimel Tvachim referred to in Erevin was actually a large kind of Levena, and that the standard Levena, or I should say the Levena mentioned in our Mishnah, was actually smaller, and that the three Tvachim included the Sid material that was added. Tosfos Michlal De'ika Zutrasi. From the fact that the Mishnah in Erevin said Levena Shel Gimel Tvachim, we can infer that there are smaller Levenas. V'im Tomar, you might ask, V'dilma, if you're trying to draw inferences or extrapolate from that which is stated, maybe Michlal, then why not infer as follows? De'ika Rav Rivasa Uma Daika Hu Ze. Gemara, when it rejected the source, it said there in Erevin they are those Gimel Tvachim, Alvenish Gimel Tvachim are large ones, and by careful reading, Daikonami, the Gemara said, you can see that there are smaller ones. So Tosfos is saying, how do you see that? Maybe you should conclude from the Mishnah Erevin that spoke of Levena Shel Gimel Tvachim that there are larger ones. How is by saying Levena Shel Gimel Tvachim so clearly infer from that there must be smaller ones? Maybe there are larger ones. The Tirates Re. De'im ein pochos mishlosha, avo gedolos yesh. If there aren't any that are less than three, but there are larger ones, im kain, then bechdi nokat, then for no reason, the Mishnah in Erevin, when speaking about the Korah, said chatzi levena shel gimel tvachim. Once again, if there in fact are larger ones, the Mishnah there in Erevin didn't have to add that Shel Gimel Tvachim. Delo havi tzorach lemisni. There, all it would have had to say, once again, if there are larger ones, then all it would have had to say, Elo, v'horiach chatzi levena. The oriach supported by that Korah is a chatzi levena v'sulo. And not say anymore, not add Shel Gimel Tvachim. Uma Mela Hoyisi Meshaya Bektana. And on my own, I would have made the calculation of the Korah using the smaller type brick. Hayol Velo Meforish Shira. By not spelling out an amount, I would have been drawn to use the smaller one. The Shitak Mikubetzes points out that the entire din of Korah is only a din de Rabbanan. It's a rabbinic law, and as such, if you wouldn't have spelled anything out, you would have simply said that the Oriach is a half a Levena. I would have used, being that it's a din de Rabbanan, I would have used the smaller one for making the calculation of the Korah dimension. However, now that the Mishnah in Erevin spells out Shel Gimel Tvachim, I am given to understand that, as Tosfos is pointing out, how the Gemara is very meduyuk, that there must be, in fact, smaller ones. And interestingly, with regard to the Korah, I'm not going to be doing that. I'm not going to be measuring with the smaller one like I would have thought. And hence, the necessity of spelling it out. Tosfos Dibur HaMaschil Hago. At this
With this Tosfos, we're going to be looking into the story involving Reimar and Mazrucha. They had shuls, or I said that in the plural. You'll see that's a point of discussion. Bei Kaita and Bei Sisfa, a summer location, a winter location. You'll notice in our markings we've added a Roman numeral 1, a couple lines later a Roman numeral number 2. The first approach is that they had in fact only one structure that was used in the summer and in the winter. The second approach is that they had two shuls, two structures, two synagogues, like we saw in the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, the Tosfos, Hagah, Bei Kaita u'Bei Sisfa havi. I should say, Bei Kaita u'Bei Sisfa havi kemoi ika tiwa v'shori. If the story involved one structure, then the issue of preparing it for the respective seasons is of the same level of urgency as the matter of Tiwa. Tiwa was a structural deficiency that threatened the security or the potential collapse of the shul, and with that we explained that Rav Chisda's restriction doesn't apply. Namely, you are able to knock down the first one before rebuilding the second one. And likewise, with regard to Reimar and Mazrucha, the urgency of having it ready for the respective seasons enabled them to knock down or to make whatever adjustments, seasonal adjustments that were necessary, according to even without taking into consideration that there was no alternative place to daven. So according to this approach, they had only one location that was used during both seasons, summer and winter, and they had a right to make whatever seasonal adjustments, even though there was no alternative location and no need to concern yourself with pshiusa. Now, number 2, ve'im shtei botei knisyas hayu b'shnei makomos. If they had, in fact, like we saw the Rabbeinu Gershom and Rashi, that there they had two locations. Once you have the issue of two locations, the consideration of tsluye that was mentioned in the Gemara becomes a non-issue. They always have an alternative place to daven. The only consideration might be the issue of pshiusa. So Tosfos goes on to say, "Shel kaita v'shel sisfa," the issue of summer and winter. Irie, and before we go further, we mentioned that the issue of alternative location is a non-factor; it's a non-starter because they have two places. The only other consideration was the issue of pshiusa. If they start making the repairs on one without the other already being in place, without being ready, they might never come to complete the repairs for the next season. And when that next season arrives, they won't have a place to. They won't have a sufficiently ready place for davening. So how did they conduct themselves anyway? Namely, how did they proceed to make their adjustments? So Ayri Kagon de Chazu Bo Tiwa. There was an actual structural damage that was present in that particular story of Reimar and Mazrucha. and therefore they didn't allow themselves to make any adjustments until they saw an actual source of, let's say, tiwa. And with this approach, the issue of kor and chom, the issue of seasonal, we'll say, discomfort, are not considered like tiwa. Therefore, the right that they had, the ability that they had to make the adjustments or to do whatever they had to do, is because their story concerned an actual structural damage. So just to reiterate this position, the approach that they had two shuls, so they were davening in the summer shul. The issue was, how could they knock down the winter shul? They didn't have a second winter shul. So the answer that Tosfos is giving is because in that winter shul, they saw a major crack develop. And because of that, they were able to knock it down and rebuild it. And likewise, the other way around. Now, Tosfos takes a new approach to this whole matter. And that is that the story of Mremar and Mazutra has nothing to do with any chashash of Pshiusa from the very outset. And therefore, you don't have to come on to the explanation of Tiyuha. The Oid Nira Lefarish. And by the way, you can see we have a diamond marking, and we've indicated under our Mivneh, our structural note on the, you can see that they are Gishos, these are approaches, Lahazbir Remar Mazutra Ba'ifen She'ein Bosses Lechashash Pshiusa. Explaining that particular story with an approach showing no basis for even worrying about Pshiusa. So now, back to the Tosfos. V'oid Nira. Kevon Diyeshom Beis Haknesses Acher. In their story, of course, assuming that there were two shuls, Ein Lochush Imlo Yivnu Zos. There isn't any concern if they don't rebuild it. So once again, they're davening, let's say, in the summer shul. They knock down the winter shul. Not worried, maybe even if they don't come to rebuild it. In other words, even without any issue of tiyuha, it would have been mutter for them to knock down that winter shul. Why? Because they had the summer shul. The summer shul was there. The ha de komar de ika duchta litsuye. The Gemara had mentioned that there would be a heter to knock down if you have an alternative place, and Hainu She'ein Beis HaKnesses. That was stated if there was only one shul and not a second shul, then there was a concern that there should be. You would not be allowed to knock down the shul unless you have an alternative place to daven. That is true if you didn't have a second shul. But in the story of Mremar and Zutra, they had a second shul. So therefore, as we said, they're davening, let us say, in the summer shul. They can knock down the winter shul even if they don't have an alternative, let's say, additional place to daven. V'oid, furthermore, machmas kor v'chom ein lochu shemo yifshu. The concern over comfort considerations, cold and heat, is such a such a strong motivating factor that they can, as we said, they're davening in their summer shul. They can knock down the winter shul. You don't have to worry that they're not going to rebuild the winter shul, even without coming on to the consideration of, I should say, and you need not worry about them
being pushabbing, lackadaisical, being irresponsible and not finishing the job. They will finish the job because of the comfort consideration. Oy, another approach why you don't have, they did not have to worry. They, once again, they're davening in a summer shul. They have plenty of time. Obizman godol kol kach ein lochush. With so much time available to rebuild the winter shul, in our example, imagine they start at the beginning of the summer in their summer shul, and they know that 6 months later winter will arrive. They have plenty of time to knock it down and rebuild it, and therefore there's nothing to, there's no additional factor that they have to take into consideration. That's why they did what they did. Ad kan hagor. Tosfos Dibur Hamasvil e Hochi. The Gemara mentioned that you have to concern yourself with the possibility of pidyon shvuyim. Therefore, you would not be allowed to knock down a shul without a new one having been built ahead of time, even though you had all the money collected or all the building materials available. The Gemara then says, well, even if you rebuild a second shul, you shouldn't be allowed to knock down the first one. The Gemara, I should say, the Tosfos Ihochi, though it's a very short Tosfos, Tosfos comes to explain the chashash. When the Gemara says, Ihochi ki banya nami, under what circumstances is the Gemara raising this as a question? Pirush ad shiyispalalu ba. In raising the question, the Gemara was saying, you know, you might have to be choshish for pidyon shvuyim and not knock down the first shul even after the second shul is rebuilt. That, let's say, worry is something to have considered until they started davening in the second shul. Once they started davening, if they had started davening in the second shul, the Gemara would not have raised the problem or the worry. Well, even after it's rebuilt, maybe you would have to still worry about pidyon shvuyim. Because once they started davening in the second shul, it's obvious that would not have been they wouldn't be expected to sell it. So what would come out from this analysis is that the Gemara, when it said that a person is not expected to sell his dwelling, is saying that even if they didn't start davening in that second shul, once the second shul is completely built, even at that early point, they haven't started davening there, they still would not have been expected to sell the second structure for the purpose of pidyon shvuyim. Tosfos Dibur Hamaschil V'Aile. We saw in the Gemara that Ravashi, in order to motivate the people to be diligent in the reconstruction of the shul, he V'Aile L'Puria L'Hosam. He brought his bed over there. From the superficial reading of the Gemara, it would appear that Ravashi brought his bed to the area of the shul, within the shul, that they were repairing, and that raises the following question. V'tema, v'ho amris, bote knesios, ein yishenim bohem, lo shinas keva, v'lo shinas aroi. It is known that one is not to sleep in a shul, not only a full night's sleep, but even a small nap, shinas haroi, literally a temporary kind of sleeping, meaning a short nap. Even that is prohibited. How then could Ravashi put his bed in the shul and conduct himself the way he did. Now, we have markings that certainly draw our attention. First of all, you see a long bracketed section. If we skip the bracketed section initially, you'll see that we arrive at V'yesh Lomar. The answer is Delav Mamish LeBeis HaKnesses Ayu LePurya Ela B'Somach of LeBeis HaKnesses. He didn't bring his bed into the shul proper, but into an adjacent room, means next to the shul, B'Mokum Sha'urchim Regiim Lishan Sham V'Lechol, a part of the shul that guests, travelers would sleep in. In other words, it wasn't the, we'll call it the main sanctuary of the shul, but in some type of auxiliary room where guests would commonly, travelers would sleep there and eat there, which are actually things that you wouldn't do in a shul proper. Okay, now that was just to give you a sense of flow of the Tosfos. Now, what's the story with regard to the bracketed section? So you notice we have a we have a long marking. First long marking indicates the length of the bracketed section. Notice we also have encircled the Ein Letaretz. In order to explain Rav Ashi's behavior, first he says, don't say the following. And you can see how long that is. And then Tosfos goes on to explain with the next, you see the next encircled expression, Dehol Komar. Don't say this because of the following. So we have a long section of what you shall not offer as an answer for Rav Ashi. So now let's go through the brackets. V'ein letaritz. Don't try to explain Rav Ashi. Mishum de bebovel have. The story transpired in Bovel. V'omar Rav Ashi beperek baser de Megillah. Botei knesius shel bovel al tnai hein asuyos. Rav Ashi, in the end of Maseches Megillah, says that the shuls of Bovel were made with a stipulation or on condition. In other words, the thinking might be that if the shul is built with a stipulation that one could sleep in it, so then one would be able to sleep in it. Well, don't say that. Upirish hakuntris hasam nafka mina the inyan hadikotani liel. And Rashi there in Megillah, in fact, says that this concept of a shul built with a stipulation is in light of that which was stated earlier, Ein oichlin bohen vein shoysin bohen vein nichnosin bohen b'chamo b'nei achamo b'gshomim b'nei agshomim. U'b'bovel muter, u'b'shel bovel muter, because of the condition. Rashi takes the approach that the statement of Botek Nisius of Bovel were made with a stipulation in light of that which was stated earlier, that one is not to eat in a shul, one is not to drink there, one isn't to enter the shul because of the heat of the sun, or to protect himself against the rain. And in Bovel, it would be allowed, according to Rashi, because of the Tanai. So Tosfos says, do not take that approach. Deha ka'omar hasam boser hachi, because right after that it says there in Maseches Megillah, Ravina v'Ravada havu kaimi v'shaimi shmeitza merova. Ravina and Ravada were involved with a Torah discussion. They were asking Rava for some say Torah explanation, and while they were standing outside. While they were standing outside, also zilcha de mitra alayhu, a flow of rain fell upon them. The ayni lebe kenishta, and they went into a shul. The lo mishul mitra, they didn't go into the shul because of the rain. That would not have been allowed, even though it's a story in Bovel, and even though the shuls of Bovel are made with a stipulation. That's not why they entered the shul. That's not the reason for their entering the shul. Elo mishum d'shmeitza boitzilusa. They entered the shul because Torah learning requires tzilusa, clarity of thought, the ability to think clearly. And because of the whatever it was, climactic conditions, they that interfered with their ability to think clearly. Once again, they enter the shul not to protect themselves from the rain, that a person is subjected to great discomfort because his clothing are drenched with rain. That would not have been sufficient reason for them, or sufficient a basis for their being allowed to enter the shul. They entered the shul because they were involved with a Torah study, and for Torah study, you need to have clarity of thought. If Rashi is correct, then it was a shul in Bavel. Wouldn't they have been able to enter because of the rain? And yet the Gemara says they entered not because of the rain. That wouldn't have been reason enough for allowing their entrance to the shul, simply to protect themselves from the discomfort. So after all is said and done, we know, once again, Rav Ashi put his bed in the shul. He slept in the shul, it would seem. And you cannot say at this point, well, because it was a shul in Bavel, which was made on based on a stipulation. The stipulation doesn't help for allowing one to sleep in a shul. Later, Tosis will deal with the issue of what then does the stipulation help for. But right now, certainly not to allow one to sleep in the shul. So, how do we explain Rav Ashi's behavior? The Yesh Lomar. Notice we have a long answer. The Lav Mamish LeBeis HaKnesses Ayli LePurya. He didn't bring his bed into the shul literally, into the actual shul. But some of LeBeis HaKnesses B'Mokom Shorchen Regilin Lishon Sham VeLechol. He brought his bed into an auxiliary room that's connected to the shul, where guests, where travelers, wayfarers would sleep and would eat. And now we have a bracketed section. This is not for skipping purposes, but we've provided you with the main answer, that Rav Ashi didn't bring his bed into the shul proper. Within the brackets, Tosis reveals to us the phenomenon, the basis of this answer, namely that guests sleep in, we'll say, in auxiliary rooms connected to shuls. Kidamrinon be'arvei psochim, in the last parak of Masech HaPsochim, it says, Hushmuel lomolei l'kdushei bebei k'nishta. Shmuel had a practice of saying Kiddush in a shul. Why? He didn't live in the shul. Why was he saying Kiddush in the shul? Lafuke orchim. And here we've highlighted the word, we dot underline orchim, that's the key word right now. He said Kiddush in shul to be moitzi, the orchim, yedei chayvasan, to enable them to fulfill their chiyuv kiddush, the achlu v'shasu v'ganu bebei k'nishta. The guests ate and drank and slept in the shul. But once again, not in the shul proper, but in an auxiliary room next to the shul, and that's where Rav Ashi brought his bed. Now we go back to the issue of what about the tanai, the hod yomar dial tanai heina suyin, that which is the Gemara says in Megillah Chof Chesamid Beis that the shuls of Bavel are made on condition or with a stipulation. Meforish Ri, so the Ri explains the inyan sheim yechrevu, in the event that the shul becomes desolate. It becomes a ruin. In general, even though a shul is in a state of ruin, there are many restrictions that apply. However, the shuls in Bavel were built with a stipulation, and that stipulation has ramifications for, we'll say, for leniency in the event that a Bavel shul finds itself in a state of ruin. That's l'inyan shim yechrevu yasu mehen mashi yirtzu. If a shul becomes a churba, they have a right to use it for whatever they want. Levad, with the exception mikalus rosh, can I mean in hosam, with the exception of kalus rosh. Kalus rosh involves behavior that's of let's say lightheaded nature. That's a kind of a literal translation, but we can say with the exception of using the shul for demeaning type activities. Tosfos Dibur HaMaskil Kol In the Gemara, we saw the story involving Hordas and his attempt to claim that he is from the Beis Hashmonoi. He had killed out all of his masters, leaving a young girl that he wanted to marry. She, however, committed suicide attempt to avoid being taken by Herod, by Hordas, and she announced moments before her death that anyone who says henceforth that they are from the Beis Hashmonai, that they are have that Beis Hashmonai pedigree, let it be known that they are a slave, because she was the last one, and she killed herself. So now the Tosfos says, "Kol Yomar mi Beis Hashmonai asina avdahu." Vechenhu, and thusly it is. That is, in fact, that is the truth, that there was no one left from the Beis Hashmonai, and anyone who would have claimed thusly is to be viewed as a slave. The Hachi Nami Omar Shmuel Beperek Asora Yuchsin. Shmuel says, he holds like that, as stated in the last perek of Maseches Kiddushin. Umikan koshe al pirush hakuntrus be'elu ne'morim. And you can see that Tosfos now starts there's a long question that he raises on Rashi's explanation found in Masechah Sotah Perek Elu Ne'morim. The Omar, there was a historical figure that followed Hordas. Omru lo la Agrippus, the Rabbonon in Maseches Sota said to Agrippus, Achinu ato, you are our brother. Now Agrippus, as we said, followed from the Herod dynasty. Upirish hakuntres hasam, and Rashi there explains, Sheomru lo, the rabbis in addressing Agrippus, were saying, Achinu, you are our brother, lefi shahoisa imoi mi Yisrael, because his mother was a Jewish woman. The imkain, kevon de bnei Hordas nosu Yisraelis, since the son of Hordas, the descendants of Hordas, married a Jewish woman, Amai Avdahave, why would Shmuel say that the descendants of the Beis Hashmonai of Hordas, why would Shmuel say that he would be considered a slave? Ha Shmuel Gufei Islay, Shmuel himself holds Oive Kichavim the Eved. Habo Abbas Yisrael, an idol worshiper or a slave that has intimacy with a Jewish woman or impregnates a Jewish woman, Havlad Kosher Behacholetz in Perek Hacholetz in Maseches Yevomis. So let's take stock of what we've said. On the one hand, we know that Shmuel is of the opinion that anyone who comes forth from Hordas is a slave. Rashi in Maseches Sota, in explaining the rabbis addressing Agrippus was a descendant of Hordas, saying, you're our brother, they're saying you're a regular Jew because his mother was Jewish. Well, if his mother was Jewish and she married a slave, the children, according to Shmuel himself, would have been Jewish and categorized as full-fledged Jews and not slaves. And that Shmuel himself is saying that the children of Hordas were considered slaves. So it must be that the children of Hordas did not marry Jewish women, contrary to what Rashi says. V'tzorech lomar shelo nosu Yisraelis. So Tosfos says, contrary to Rashi, that you'll have to say that the Bnei Hordis, the descendants of Hordis, did not marry Jewish women. Ah, v'koru achenu atah. The rabbis there in Maseches Sota that addressed Agrippus by saying, you're our brother, not because he's a Jew. Lefi she'eved achenu hu b'mitzvus. Because a slave has the obligation of observing numerous mitzvahs like a regular Jew. And it's worth pointing out, if you want to research this a little bit further, that because of this consideration on the part of the Rabbonan in Maseches Sota, that one is called Achinu because of his obligation in the fulfillment of numerous mitzvahs, the Gemara in Bava Kamma holds that if one embarrasses a slave, payment must be made. There's a Tana that disagrees, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees over there, and says that when one embarrasses a slave, no boshes, embarrassment, payment is made. Their machlokes concerns the posuk that deals with the issue of boshes, which says, ki yinotsu anoshim yachtov ish v'ochiv. Notice the word v'ochiv in that posuk. Is ochiv b'mitzvahs sufficient for categorizing someone as ochinu? Well, according to the Rabbanan, that said, you have to pay an eved for boshes because he's called achinu in terms of mitzvah obligation. So Tosfos uses that position, the position of the Rabbanan in Hilchis Boshes, to explain the reason the Rabbanan in Maseches Sota addressed Agrippus, a descendant of Hordas, by the term achinu atah, but not because his mother was Jewish. For if his mother was Jewish, then Shmuel would never have said that Hordas' descendants are considered avodim. Tosfos Dibur Hamaschil Man. In, describing Hordas' behavior with regard to the Rabbanan, the Gemara pointed out he killed off all the Rabbanan, because the Rabbanan didn't accept him as a king. And why not? Well, the Rabbanan Darshan, the Pasuk, that speaks about Som Tosim Alecho Melech, Mikerev Ochecho Tosim Alecho Melech. So the expression Mikerev Ochecho is something that a phrase in the Pasuk that the Rabbanan Darshaned to exclude slaves. So the exclusion of slaves is because of we call Ter Shebal Peh, a Droshes Chazal. So Tosfos says, Man Dorish Mikerav Ochecha, to exclude slaves. Rabbanan, the Pashte Dekra, the simple reading of the Pasuk, you might say the way Hordas approached the Pasuk, Hordas had, we'll say, a certain level of respect for the written word, if you will. That might be taken in sarcasm in light of, you see, his behavior, but for our immediate purposes, we'll say that he regarded the written word, Pashtei Dekra, the simple reading of the Pasuk, as far as Hordas was concerned, Lo Mashma Limute, I'm skipping a couple words, we have brackets, Elo Oyvei Kechavim, the simple reading of the Pasuk is to exclude idol worshippers. The Pasuk says, from amongst your fellow men, from amongst your brethren, however you want to translate the word, achecha, the simple reading of achecha, your fellow brethren, I would exclude an outsider. What outsider? An idol worshipper. But not excluding a slave. So now let's read the Tosfos again. The Pashtei Dekra lo mashmi lemute eved shu achicha b'mitzvus. Notice we have a little arrow. This is what we mentioned just at the end of the previous Tosfos. Avodim are considered your fellow brethren with regard to mitzvah fulfillment. We saw that as the position taken by the Rabbonin in Maseches Sota with regard to Agrippus, according to Tosfos' explanation. So when the Pasuk says, Mikerev Achecha, from amongst your brethren you shall appoint a king, well, slaves are also your brethren as far as Agrippus, as far as Hordus is concerned. And what is the Pasuk Mimayit? Eloi v'kechavim. V'rabonon darshu. The Rabbonon came along and excluded slaves as well. Mimuvchor shebe'achecha. The term mikerev achecha, from amongst your brethren, according to the rabbinic Torah Shebaal Peh approach, means from muvchor, from the choicest of your brethren. So by saying the choicest of your brethren, we're speaking about someone who is a recognized, full-fledged Jew would be suitable, be eligible for kingship, and not a slave. A slave, even though he's obligated in mitzvah fulfillment to a certain degree, you wouldn't consider him muvchar shebechecha. And once again, the Rabbanan arrived at their conclusion by darshaning the expression mikerev achecha, from amongst your brethren, not just me'achecha. It could very well be that Hordus would have had some claim if the Pasuk had left out the word mikerev. If the Pasuk said me'achecha, from amongst your brethren, fine. But mikerev achecha, that led the Rabbanan to add an additional exclusionary factor, thereby excluding slaves as well as idol worshippers from being eligible for the monarchy. Tosfos Dibur Maskil Katlinu. We saw the tragic episode in the Gemara that out of frustration or vengeance, Hordus killed off the Kula Rabbana. Now, if we translate that literally, it means he killed off all of the rabbis. Now, Hordus, as I'm sure everyone understood from the Gemara, was in the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael. So the Tosfos is saying, or I should say the initial understanding is, he killed off all the rabbis that were in the land of Israel. So the Gemara says, Lav dafka l'kulhu, don't take it literally as being he killed off all the rabbis in the land of Israel. Tehavu b'nei b'seira, Shehoyu Nesiim, Kishola Hilomi Bovel. There were the B'nai B'Seira, which were the leaders of the Jewish people at that time, that were the Nesiim. They were the heads of the Jewish community in Eretz Israel when Hillel arose to Israel from Bovel. Kiramriyam B'Soch Perakei L'Dvorim. V'Hillel Hoya B'Fnei Habayis Mea Shana. And Hillel, we know, lived historically at a point in time which was 100 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Some would say that's approximately the year 30 before the Common Era, because the Beis HaMikdash is taken to have been destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era. So going 70 Common Era backwards in time, 100 years, you get to approximately something like 30 before the Common Era. What's important for us is that was the time of Hordus' reign. So very simply, you see, let me just finish the last couple words. It says, Hillel was Hoya B'fnei Abayis Mea, Shana Kedamrino B'Perakama de Shabbos, as is spelled out in the first parak of Maseches Shabbos. So with that being said, Hillel was 100 years before the destruction of the temple. He came at the time that he came and actually replaced the B'nai B'Seira as the leader of the Jewish people. And the B'nai B'Seira were already in the land of Israel. And this is all at the time of Hordus and his mass execution of Rabbanan. So we see that he didn't kill off all the Rabbanan. You can see the B'nai B'Seira remained. They remained at that time. And of course, as Tosfos concludes, Umachus Hurdus Hoya Befnei Habayis Kuf Gimel Shana, the reign of Hurdus was while the Beis Hamikdash was standing, 103 years before its destruction. Can Amrinu Beperikama Avodah Zarah, as the Gemara says clearly in the first perek of Avodah Zarah. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.